Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're covering Season 4, Episode 6, Never Ricking Morty. Here's Aaron with the recap.
Rick and Morty find themselves on a cosmic train with no memory of how they got there. One thing is quickly made clear. All tracks lead to a confrontation with Rick Sanchez. As every occupant on the transport has had previous dealings with Rick, almost none of them good. Things get meta fast as Rick and Morty realize they're trapped in an elaborate story framing device, and the only way out is an answer Rick never thought he'd have to turn to. Unironic faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. All right, Jim. Never Ricking Morty. What did you think?
This is a beautiful mess of an episode, a meta mess of an episode. It's an episode that's all about storytelling meta, commercialization of stories, and the kind of the tendencies of modern online fandoms as well. And I think it's meant to be sort of an interdimensional cable for this season based on some of the things they say in the episode.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll still get an interdimensional cable, because this was all very kind of Rick and Morty centric. It reminded me more of the Morty Mind Blowers, which, as we talked about before, doesn't quite scratch that same itch for me. You know, like it's really cool to have these unconnected kind of like a clip show. But the interdimensional cable is, I feel like that's where you really let like the Justin Roiland side go crazy. And just there are no answers. You tack on some kind of framing device that explains why, which is the interdimensional cable. You can just have Rick and Morty on a couch and introducing craziness after craziness. This was a little bit of that, but this feels more like I know Rob Schraub, one of Dan Harmon's longtime writing partners, has joined the show in the story room. And I think he's directing a few episodes. And I feel like this felt like the result of like a big fight they had or a good natured fight they had in the writing room between, you know, like Dan, like in a story circle, and whether they should be slaves to that, and like how much flexibility you've got, and, you know, how can we be relatable as rich dudes versus, you know, to what extent you want to market stuff. And we got a 7-season contract, so fuck all this. I went, as soon as I got done watching this episode, I went to the Harmontown subreddit. You know, Dan's canceled his podcast, but there's still a community going strong there. And someone there said that this episode is up its own ass in the best way possible.
Sure.
And I really, really felt that. Like, there's so, like, this is a lot of late stage Harmontown stuff. Like, Dan discovering the word cum gutter was in here. There's a lot of like the late stage Harmontown improv where, you know, things would get really meta and breaking the fourth wall. And I don't know, man. There's so much stuff here that doesn't really make literal sense. And I was desperately trying to piece it together. And then the final framing device where it's almost like St. Elsewhere snow globe.
Yeah.
Where all this took place on a toy train and it literally doesn't matter. So all the canon, not canon, just completely doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's wild.
That's kind of where I get to. Like, this is sort of the tendencies of modern online fandoms with like, their desires for what they want to see from the show and what the creators want to give them. And, you know, this pull and push and pull tension between the two is kind of fascinating to me. And it's got to be fascinating to writers like Dan and Justin, who are very concerned about the structural stuff of storytelling and are willing to sort of pile that into their work. The beautiful mess thing is kind of what really attracts me to this episode, because you're right, not a lot of it is meant to be taken literally. It's all just kind of, there's half metaphor, half just meta commentary. There's parts of it that, like, you know, they brush up against what they would call canon or whatnot, but then they subvert those, and you're meant to be, I think, felt like kind of reeling at the end of this episode, not really knowing what to think about it.
Yeah, like when he was, they were dealing with the idea of Summer aging out of her role and going to college, and then you see an old favorite like Abradolph Linkler, and Rick says, they're taking the good stuff, Morty, and Morty's like, is this even canon? He's like, it could have been, like, the fact that, and I think it's hilarious that, like, Dan and Justin and all these guys are putting, like, you know, when they showed that final confrontation, like, let's see how your story ends. And it's just phalanxes of Gazorpazorpians and Meeseeks and an army of Rick bent to evil Morty's will. There's somehow a dark acolyte, Mr. Poopy Butthole, mm-hmm. that's all like Monster Man Emperor Palpatine or Palpatined in his little hood. And that's so awesome. Like, if you ask the average fan, like, how would you like to see, like, this apocalyptic end to Rick and Morty, that's probably kind of a cool shape for it to appear in. And they just metaphorically waddle that stuff into a ball and throw it in a trash basket and say, well, that was cool, but this is explicitly not canon. In fact, it's not even not canon. It's like as canon as a adventure you would have with your Star Wars figures out in a sandbox when you were 7 years old. Like, it's explicitly just a toy version. So, like, as cool as it is, we're gonna have to come up with something even cooler for the real final arc of this show. It's really ballsy and very hilarious. And it's the whole time, I think you hit on something that it feels like they're always flirting with alienating the fan base by pointing all this shit out, how absurd it is.
Right. Because it's not just about, like, wadding up, you know, what would be a cool thing for the you know, climax of this series and throwing it out mm-hmm. the window and saying we'll do better. It's more about, like, setting expectations, you know, like saying your expectations for what we're going to do with this show need to be balled up and thrown out the window, because we're making this show and you're either going to enjoy it or you're not going to enjoy it. But what we're not going to do is sit here and make the show that we think you want us to make. Right.
Right. Like, almost like, I feel like that's something that's been, you know, you go back to all the different commentaries we listened to in seasons 1 through 3. And I think about all the stuff that, like, Dan said on his podcast, and I've seen him say in interviews. It's like almost like they're self-consciously reflexively against doing that. Like, if mm-hmm. someone, if they ever came across someone with, like, a good idea for an in shape of Rick and Morty to go in, they would, like, radically depart from that. Like, nah, fuck that. We want to go take the road less charted. You know, it's like one of those thrilling things. I was like, can they do that for 7 more seasons? Like, as they get a larger and larger body of canon and continuity, and continuity bottles explode, and, you know, more and more apocalyptic threats to Rick. I mean, he's already got, like, how many arch nemesis does he have at this point? He's got Stephen Colbert's guy in the pocket universe. He's got, you know, evil Morty.
Probably Abradolph Linkler.
Yeah, the devil himself. Like, is the devil
Robo bird person? I don't know what's calling him at this point.
Phoenix person. And Tammy. Like, there's so many of these, like, giant villains that he accumulates. The president of the United States.
Yep.
There's so many of these, like, potentially existential threats that they're just collecting, like, so many Christmas ornaments. And, like, when you hang all those on the tree at the end, what the hell is it even going to look like?
You know, that's kind of the thing about this show, is the possibilities are so wide open with the premise, right? I mean, early in the show, we're trying to pin down, okay, what are they not going to do? What are the rules they're establishing in this universe? Time travel, is that off the table? Well, they've kind of said it is, but then they did these other things, which are time travel-y. You get to a point where the possibilities are so wide open that canon almost can't exist in that atmosphere. Because in any moment, it could change, right? Because they could, you know, it's not even like retconning at that point. It's more just like, we've never put boundaries on these characters or the stories we can tell in this world. And so your idea of what canon is should be very, very flexible.
Yeah, and they've added, like, you know, they had interdimensional Cable, which is a way they could kind of, like, do whatever hell they wanted. Then they had Morty's Mind Blowers, where they could go and introduce alternate ideas of canon and things that you could tell about a character, but they could just undo it because that memory got erased. And now they've got, like, you could see, like, in season 6, what if Morty gets down the train set and decides to unironically play with it? And then we go through all these fictitious adventures of Rick and Morty. It's It's crazy. And I like it. And you wonder, like, you know, it's like, how do they keep getting away with it? You know?
And you mentioned the,
like what Rick says is like, you know, when I create shit, it works. That's called being talented. Like, is that,
that
might be the showrunners talking right to us. Yeah.
No, that was good. And you know, there's also the element of like the commercialization of fandoms, you know, and this, it's kind of the main thing in this episode where they're just, you know, Rick is the salesperson here. Like he's always ironically saying things. So this is not like out of character or anything. And you know, he's willing to do what it takes to get out of a situation. So even the Jesus stuff, the God stuff is not out of his character. But I think like him talking about this train and saying, oh yeah, you need to open your wallet. Where's your fucking wallet? Buy two trains. Don't return that one. Just buy another. Consumerism.
If you don't buy the train, it's an act of buying the train.
Right. Which
like I like that idea. Like there's sometimes something is so huge in the culture that like taking a stand and saying I don't like if you said in the last 10 years, I don't watch Game of Thrones. You're almost taking like a bold cultural stance.
How about I do that with Harry Potter?
Yeah, well, you love, yeah. You're a fucking iconoclast when it comes to entertainment. Like, you kind of have a secret delight at, oh, that thing you loved in your childhood, fucking never saw it.
Right.
Not going to. I don't give a shit if it's the best thing. But, like, there's a couple things where Marvel movies is another example. Like, if you go in a crowd of people who are talking about Endgame and you dropped it, like, yeah, I've never seen a Marvel movie. You're almost endorsing the cultural hegemony by taking a stance against it, right?
It's a conversation starter at the very least. But yes,
it's like saying you're an atheist in a quote unquote Christian nation. Like that statement includes a whole bunch of presuppositions in rolled into it that I acknowledge that this is kind of quote unquote a Christian nation. I am not buying into that stuff, and I'm not buying this at the extent that I've actually thought my position through, come up with a label of it that defines me in opposition of you. Yeah, man, that fucking train commercial. That's not a train commercial to the extent that they did they came up with a URL that was available, registered it because it's owned by Turner Broadcasting, and then didn't do anything with it.
Beautiful.
I don't know. It's avant-garde. I love that shit.
Yeah. And the never Rick and Morty is obviously a reference to the Never Ending Story, which is kind of the perfect meta note to hit here, because that story is all about two worlds, one that we think is a real world and one that is within a book, kind of merging over the course of that story. And the anthology is wrapped up in that too, because there's very much this Bastion is this kid is going to have many more adventures, and they're all going to be told through this fairy tale, this fable sort of mechanism as an anthology. I think they tried to do that with the series. They got to, I think, three, and then that thing just petered out. But yeah, it's kind of the perfect framing device. I really like the name of this episode.
Yeah, and they do this other thing I think Rick and Morty are so good at, where they touch on like political hot buttons. Like you had in this one 24-minute episode, they touched on wanton and indiscriminate cop killing. They talked on like are you familiar with the NoFap movement that's kind of like gone on certain line where like people
I know what it is. I am not familiar with the movement, no.
No, it's like there's like mostly men online who have convinced themselves that they're addicted to porn and masturbation. And, you know, you can get addicted to anything. Mm-hmm. But then they create these communities where they extol the virtues of not masturbating. And then that turns into kind of preserving your precious bodily fluids and energy.
Sure.
And how you get like better clarity. And you almost like they talk about it in almost the forms of like the kind of it's kind of like the same way that like transcendental meditation people talk about transcendental meditation.
Yeah. It gives you a high.
It's like, have you tried not jerking off, bro? I haven't jerked off in like 6 months. And like, I can fucking levitate now. Like they got that. And the fact that like, also, like, I think I secretly believe that 95% of those people, if they got the chance to, like, you know, get their dicks wet, they'd take it, even if it would destroy their superpowers. And I felt like they lampooned that really well in this episode.
Yeah, the universe.
Yeah, the feminist masterpiece that they constructed with their special times and Morty's 14-year-old boy understanding and comfort with that.
Mm-hmm.
with a metaphorical and literal kind of ticking time bomb gun to his head. Man, they touch on that stuff so lightly and they fire the guns in so many directions that, like, what are you going to say about it?
Yeah.
Like, it's almost, I don't know. Like, you could almost start saying, like, what is the actual through point? Like, are they going to, like, a South Park direction where they essentially say everything's stupid? Like, because I think that one of the criticisms that people levy against South Park is that, like, the only consistent moral framework that the South Park guys have is caring about things as stupid. Mm. And I don't know. Sometimes, like, I thought this stuff was really funny, but, like, I think you could go into the Rick and Morty, like, any Rick and Morty subgroup or fan group, and it might be equally divided how people, like, whether people think this is punching up or punching down on feminists, or I don't know, sure, cops killing people or whatever.
Religion. They even make a meta joke about it in the episode itself. So.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, you know, you have the ultimate defense is this is just literally action figures, you know, going about on a play vehicle. So, like, the how serious do you want to take it? Which goes back to, like, you know, maybe the only crime is caring about something. You had to have caught in the fact that the Paul Giamatti was a story lord, right?
No.
You didn't see, he was one of the guest stars and he was the story lord. 90% cum gutter, Paul Giamatti.
What? How did I miss that?
I don't know. Well, he was doing a performance. Like, it wasn't just, like, immediately recognizable Paul Giamatti. Huh. Also, the vaguely Wolverine-looking dude that kind of started the vignette scene, it was Clancy Brown, who's done a lot of work on the show at this point. He was a little bit more recognizable. I really liked his voice stylings.
It was a performance, like you said, because I did not recognize him at all, and I'm a big Paul Giamatti fan.
They described him as the Matrix, some type of Matrix space Frasier, which man, Dan's really good at, like, those kind of labels, because it immediately, you know, that Colonel Sanders guy, but he's kind of, like, up his ass and knows, you know, is a know-it-all. Hmm. He's also got the kind of, like, Ozymandias looking space outfit on that he rips off to reveal his impressive cum gutters.
Yeah, I want to talk about that a little bit, because I had not heard that phrase either.
Really?
Not to describe abdominal muscles, no.
Nice, because I heard that about 10 years ago. A friend of mine described their boyfriend as having them, and I was like, it's one of those phrases that as soon as you hear it, you know exactly what it is.
Right.
But it is. It's like, yeah, it's become. It seems like it's hitting a cultural inflection point, because more and more people. I was an early adopter of the cum gutter. Didn't invent it. Huge fan. Wish I had them. especially, like, just, like, the joke kept on getting, like, crazier and crazier. Mm-hmm.
When Jesus, that was one of the things I gets him, that was too good.
He's got the perfect ones, and they're literally, mm-hmm, like, the holy light was emanating from them. I mean, I think that's one of the best of the early Simpsons jokes, the fact that Groundskeeper Willie every once in a while would have cause to rip his overalls off, and he was just revealed to be ripped and shredded, and he would, like, wrestle wolves and things.
Yep.
And this is just kind of like that with a rule of three. Like, every single time it comes back, it's going to be more impressive or, it's funny in a repetition.
It might be the perfect time to talk about some of these other story structure stuff with the rule of three, because they're also poking a little fun at themselves here. Like, if you've been listening to this podcast for more than this episode, we've talked about this concept of a story circle that Dan Harmon has kind of coined. You know, it's based on, like, the hero's journey and all sorts of other storytelling devices, but this is kind of his version of it. And they have an overt reference to that in this episode, where they're kind of poking fun at just how, I guess, formulaic everything is when you stick to that story circle, and sort of the stale stories that you get out of that. And this episode is very much breaking with that particular storytelling model.
But by slavishly following it, because you know, everything he mentions, like when he says, oh, we're in a story circle, like, oh, here's the part where we just got through the vignettes, thank God. Here's the part where I'm going to have to make a shabbily constructed spacesuit to walk along the thing to cross this threshold. We're going to have to pay a steep sacrifice to cross this threshold. And so this is also, I watched this and then I immediately watched it again without taking notes, just because I knew it would be a rewarding experience, because they tell you what they're going to do and then that informs the rest of the episode.
Right.
So like, did the heavy sacrifice they had to make, was it Rick almost dying, or was it Morty having to think about his mom and sister on their period?
That's a good question, because they don't lose anything there, right? Other than maybe their own but I don't know, whatever
discomfort
it is.
With biology.
Yeah.
But I think that was, and then all that stuff actually happens. Everything he says in that little compartment where he finds out this is a story circle. And then you find out literally it represents a metaphor for the train, you know, that like you work your way through the old enemies compartment and then your allies compartment and then the old lovers compartment and you confront the story master.
Yeah, there's a mini story circle within the fabric of this entire episode.
Yeah, and there's all this like breaking, like literally of walls where they're getting thrown outside the train and they're reliving these wildly out of canon narratives. And every time I liked when Morty got pulled back in, it's like, hold on to the highest truth, Morty, that you're actually on a train getting your ass kicked, mm-hmm. as right before he gets thrown out the window himself. I don't know. I thought that stuff was always really good. And also, is there a little bit of nervousness in that scene where you've got the story master, you know, like we've even said this, like Rick and Morty is a show that has no limits. Mm-hmm. Like there's so many ways they can break narrative. They can take whatever continuity they want. But this show, that particular scene where you've got a nefarious character trying to pull that to its utmost limits, like, can I exhaust all of the narrative energy, all of the story potential to maximize its marketability and its relatability? I wonder if that also is some kind of fear in the writing room that, like, if they take that shit for granted, it can be pumped dry.
Yeah, I was reading more of it as like the machinery of the commercialized storytelling industry is sort of pumping that dry. And then, you know, it's not limitless. It's not inexhaustible. Fresh ideas are, you know, potentially have more value than ideas that have been done to death and maybe are, you know, easily understood by a mass media consumption population. But like, I don't know, it could be some of that as well.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
So, like, on that note, when they defeat the Story Master and Rick goes to, like, you know, save the day, and he realizes that this is a fake train. Did you notice there's something inside the throttle handle?
Inside?
There's like some kind of like the inside of that was graduated and it had like, you know, like some kind of scale of numbers or something. When it rolled away, I was wondering if there is some kind of like thing to that. You know, we're doing this show on a Monday, early Monday afternoon. So, like, I didn't have a limitless amount of time to, like, look into it. And I didn't see anything written around the internet. But, like, everything, like, he just rips off this label and he breaks this thing. And it's like there was some kind of writing and numbers. I wasn't sure what that was supposed to represent. And maybe this is me not adhering to the overall lesson, which is nothing matters, because I was trying to think of like, is this some kind of like lost numerical sequence that we're supposed to realize something? But it's also just it's also like, what could it be? It's just the inside of a fucking handle from the Citadel of Ricks. But then again, it's the Citadel of Ricks. It came from a gift shop in the Citadel of Ricks. Is this an evil Citadel of Ricks plan that they're hinting at that's going to, you know, mature at the end of the season? I don't know.
I don't know either. I didn't even notice it.
Yeah. But I just thought that,
you know, when we're talking about things that we saw on screen, I want to talk about a couple of moments that I liked and also just the overall general animation. I think, like, it, you know, as much good stuff as we've said about the animators over the past few seasons, they really kicked it into high gear this episode. Like, there are a couple of shots that I'm almost certain you can only do in 3D. And I know, you know, most animation software these days is 3D. But they kind of pull some stuff that we haven't seen a lot in Rick and Morty, which that zoom through the crowd of, you know, evil, essentially stormtroopers under the control of, you know, Star-Lord or whoever the hell he is. That was really cool. And then, man, maybe my okay, there are two other things, actually. So when they're doing this, you know, feminist masterpiece fantasy of Morty's, there's a shot where they show Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and she's framed. All three of these are framed in split screen with a couple of rainbows, but they're like off at an angle, and so it forms like this V in the middle of the screen, which I just thought was a moment of genius. And then the last one, which is maybe the most amazing thing I've seen in a while, is Floaty Blood Man. Just he, you know, this train tickets please guy gets ripped in half and he's floating out in the suspension of disbelief, essentially. And he's just in this family fun time place spraying blood everywhere for what they make clear is months, like 3 months. And I see people running around in this building, which implies that either A, they're trapped in there with a man who is geysering blood from his torso, or they are specifically being let in to experience this, and Family Funtime has turned this into a new attraction, thereby, you know, taking this tragedy and, like, I don't know. It's just, it's such a good piece. It's just such a good moment to have people running around in that place.
But yeah, the attention to, like, the fact that the blood was coming out of this spiraling and just splashing everywhere. there was a lot, like I wrote this as something to talk about too, is like this show never half-asses anything. Like from the very first frame, you've got deep space and then like this train popping out of hyperspace and rushing towards the camera. And it was just cool.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they pay attention to like what is the kind of meta of a starship appearing out of nowhere nowadays. Like you've seen this in like, you know, the Expanse going through jump gates, or you see it in the new Star Treks and Star Wars. And then like it comes out the train, someone, you know, like lovingly designed this space train and it looks like some kind of cosmic snowpiercer. And they just really commit to all of these ideas. Like you said, the shot of them swooping through like the Death Star Canyon of the troops in the Rick and Morty apocalypse. They just, I don't know, man. It's really fun. Like Rick growing multiple arms to win a gunch, and then growing
cheeks.
Multiple anuses to to have slightly different, you know, fart harmonics. It's amazing. I fucking loved it. I even like stuff like, you know, the conversation that Story Lord and Jesus Christ had on the beach, where they're talking about how Yahweh was a Sumerian god named Yah and a Mesopotamian god named Way. Like that's literally ripped from a conversation him and Duncan Trussell had on a Christmas episode from Harmontown like 7 years ago. Which, by the way, if you're a huge Rick and Morty fan, I cannot recommend enough The Midnight Gospel, which is a new animated show on Netflix. And the hook on that is Duncan Trussell, the aforementioned Duncan Trussell, which is kind of like, imagine Joe Rogan, who never got into MMA and got way more into mushrooms and DMT, if you can believe it. And just talks about crazy religious experiences and metaphors for life. They take his podcast that he does and they take where he interviews celebrities and talks about this stuff. And then they get Pendleton Ward, the guy who did Adventure Time. They get to animate that parts of the conversation, and they come in, they do like 2 minutes of ADR with the star in question to make a loose narrative happen. But it's just this guy who like beams into different consciousnesses throughout the universe and does a podcast based on that. It's really fun. And I know Dan has appeared in his podcast. I'm really looking forward to a future season when we get the Dan Harmon episode. But I think if you like Rick and Morty, you might want to check out that Midnight Gospel on Netflix.
The last thing I wanted to mention was the mention of the coronavirus, because obviously, you know, that happens at the end, which made me, it kind of took me aback, because I was wondering,
sure,
at that point, it is a pretty recent reference. How long ago did they wrap production on this thing?
Yeah, like speaking of South Park, those guys like pioneered the technique of fully animating an episode within 2 or 3 days of a news event to take advantage of that recency. Now, this, it seems like something that would be very relatively easy to like, because there was like, what, one or two lines of dialogue,
sure,
about it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I wonder if they're looking for ways to kind of blend that, because, you know, they've obviously talked about like what, you know, because of the high quality of animation, this isn't South Park animation,
no,
which is designed to look like crude paper mache shit kind of swiggling around. It is painstaking to do. I wonder if they are leaving like little niches where they can insert like really relevant, fresh commentary. But I don't know. There's so many things I don't understand about the season. Like, why did we have the 4-month, 5-month gap in the middle? You know, was this like a unique one shot where they're like, oh, we're going to go live in a couple weeks, oh, let's get into the booth and tape another line and have them reanimate the lips so we can get a coronavirus dig in here and a dig on like commercialism or something? I don't know.
It just makes me wonder if later in the season we're going to start hearing things that were maybe not super obviously, but definitely recorded at people's houses, like on microphones at their desks, like kind of like we're doing here, right? Because everybody's, sure, self-isolating. If you got some lines you need to loop in, some fixes to dialogue, some changes in animation, you might have people doing things from their houses, because this can all be done remotely, right? There's no actor that needs to stand in front of a camera. There's people who are just sitting at a desk in an office doing this stuff anyway. So like, you can get it done. I wonder if that'll start to bleed into the show here.
Yeah, I mean, I know they prefer to like have it done on probably their soundscape where they can get direction and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, if they need to just grab a couple of lines, like just have someone record it and
right? I forget the exact episode, but they had one of the guest stars record a few lines on their phone and send them in.
That does seem familiar. I was about to say, but I thought I wasn't sure if that was Rick and Morty, if that was some other show I was watching where they talked about.
It's definitely Rick and Morty. I remember it.
Yeah,
I just don't remember who it was.
Yeah. Wasn't it a phone call? Like it was literally like an answering machine message or something. They just had
it might have been like Joel McHale or somebody.
Yeah.
I'll say it was him.
But yeah, they could do that. And if it's like something that they, maybe if all you're talking about is like changing the lip configuration, maybe that's something they can do a real fast turnaround time on. But I'm curious to see how they can maybe continue to blend the bleeding edge with the Rick and Morty.
Yeah,
we got a piece of feedback from Fate Strife sent in right towards the tail end of last. This is from a time capsule 4 months ago. You can send feedback to Rick and Morty at baldmove.com if you got something you want to say about this episode or our coverage in general. Fate has the following. Says, I recently listened to your entire catalog of Rick and Morty podcasts, and there's one detail that has been bugging me. Well, first of all, thanks for going through the slog. I appreciate it. That's some dedication there. They continue. Anytime the multiverse comes up, the show gets shat on a little bit for any decision it makes, because in theory, an infinite number of universes means that anything's possible. Yeah. There's no limit to anything the show can do. In other words, for any decision a character makes, there's an infinite number of versions of that character that made or did not make said decision, which makes anything that they do meaningless. I would like to state that this is not possible, though, for one simple reason. There's no way to physically make a dial or remote with an infinite number of options. Just because there are an infinite number of universes between Earth 1 and 2 does not mean that you can make a controller physically search for infinity. Any portal technology a Rick and Vince would be limited to their programming and tuning capabilities.
Yeah, it's literally impossible, right? To make a machine that could tune into a limitless number of possibilities.
Yeah, you would think, because in our universe, we have a finite number of particles.
Right.
So like just to construct a device that had infinite, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. The same way how most analog radios work will allow you to listen to any channel, to a channel, even if you're slightly off the tuning due to the limitation of how precise you can physically make the instrument. There are only so many universes that any Rick can tune into, even if the number is huge, like in the trillions, there'd still be a limit. So when Rick makes a statement saying that there's only a limited number of options in a multiverse for any one thing, he's probably referring to the number that any Rick can physically reach as opposed to universes in existence. I've never thought about the limits of the portal gun itself and what you could experience, or the limits in like a remote control.
Yeah, so I find that interesting as a former developer, software developer. Because if I were trying to approach an extremely large, or in this case, infinite number of possibilities, uh-huh, with a limited scope at any one time, what I would do is probably break that infinite possibilities down into subsets, which I could then sort of dial between subsets. Like, you can't do it, because the definition of infinite means that any finite anything is going to be incomparable next to the infinite, right? So like you're never going to be able to break the infinite down into enough subsets that a finite controller could access them all.
Well, they also kind of lampshade this a bit with the concept of what they call the finite reality curve. Like there are true in an infinite number of existences, but there's only a small amount that like has a Rick and has a Morty and has Beths and Jerry. And this kind of like, because Rick is so self-centered, these are the possibilities that concern him. Like, I wonder if there's like a module you can get for your portal gun that like that takes some other slice of another finite curve, or maybe Rick doesn't exist and they can use that. Or, oh man, I just thought of, like, you know, we talked about how you couldn't build a universe. You couldn't build a simulator that perfectly simulates our universe, because you don't, you know, you'd need at least one particle to simulate every particle in the universe, right? So like you'd need another universe's worth of shit to simulate ours. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they go off the non-finite curve and just use entire universes in their machines and simulations. like there's several universes in their infinite realities that are just running the Rick and Morty software.
I mean, that would be cool. And I think you could take a whole bunch of universes and use those to simulate a single universe. But the trouble here with infinity is that any subset of infinity is also infinity. And so, you know, you can say, OK, well, there's a finite number of these universes that have Ricks and Mortys in them. But that's definitely not true in a truly infinite universe. In an infinite universe, there is also an infinite number of universes that have a Rick and or a Morty in them. And there's also an infinite number of universes that don't, right? It's this is a brain-breaking, narrative-breaking, show-breaking concept. And that's why we talk about it all the time, because I just find it fascinating to think about those things. I don't expect the show to adhere to some strict definition of infinity, right? When they say infinity, they're throwing around a term that means something far beyond most people's true comprehension. And they're not trying to say that this is truly infinite. They're trying to put a big number out there that doesn't limit them.
Yeah. I mean, not only that, but also at the end of the day, this is a cartoon where a guy takes a pill to grow another butthole so he can have a two-tone fart. But I'm thinking of, like, you're right, this is a race condition. Like, imagine you're Mr. Fantastic, you know, you're the guy in a Fantastic Four that can stretch his arms. You're trying to get your arms around the known universe. And as you stretch your arms around it, the universe grows because it's infinite. And eventually you get to a point where he's, you know, his fucking arms are only one atom thick. And then if he tries to stretch one more, it breaks. Like, you're right. You cannot physically bound an infinite concept. But like you said, there's the portal gun limitations that our emailer here, Fate, is talking about. You also have the show itself conceding that there is only a finite number, the finite curve to space-time that they're primarily considered with. So, but that still gives them so much room to, you know, I feel like infinite is useful in Rick and Morty because they can blow our minds when they want to, but they can also dodge behind the finite curve whenever they want to, like, say, well, there's a manageable scope to it.
Right. And I'm not trying to, like, you know, shit all over this emailer. I think you're very much right about the way that that device would need to function. It's just, you know, the way that they use infinite as a term in the show and the way that we understand infinite in the real world don't line up. But that's fine. Pickle Me This is distributed and produced by Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media @BaldMove. See you next time.